Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we have in the studio Craig Perkins, we have Julie Thompson, and we also have Melissa Meyer, marketing strategist for UW Organ and Tissue Donation. We're going to talk today about kidney disease, transplants, and other topics. Well, good to have you in the studio, Craig, and let's talk a little bit about your journey. You're the recipient of a kidney transplant, and you're living proof that it works, aren't you?
Yeah, I received a living donor kidney on November 1st. It all moved really quick. It was like a two-week heads up, like, hey, you're going to, you know, receive this kidney on this day. Surgery's already set up if you accept it. You know, so you got to kind of make a decision within like a few hours, because otherwise they're going to move down the list. And I said, yeah, I would definitely take that.
So you were told that you had to pretty much be on call, ready to go, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, they schedule that surgery, and if, you know, my biggest fear during that was illness. You know, like if you get a cold or, I mean, any illness pre-surgery, it will disqualify you, you know. So that was a very nerve-wracking 2 weeks. So.
Well, you're real well-versed in medical terms now, and I don't think you probably were a year or so ago.
I learned to be my own nurse for a while. So, yeah, all the different medications you got to memorize. And I mean, you know, I take probably, you know, 25 different pills a day for the rejection and not getting ill. And So you definitely got to know what to take and not to take and be able to switch it up real quick, you know, depending on your lab results, weekly labs and stuff like that. So
how long ago did you learn that you were in kidney failure?
It was, I believe September of 23 is when they diagnosed the autoimmune disease, which caused the kidney failure and the treatment options. And I pretty much went on dialysis right away just because it was so bad. They kind of hoped to cut, you know, bring it back, you know, with treatments and stuff. And it never got any better. So you just had to stay on the dialysis through the journey till transplant. So.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn about autoimmune disease then?
Not a lot. A lot of big terms that I didn't understand. Uh-huh. You know, there's a lot of them out there. It definitely attacks the body, you know. They basically suppress it with, chemotherapy treatment in my situation. And basically runs it down so far that it quits attacking your body. Is my understanding of it. And, you know, I'll be doing treatments on that for a couple more years just to, so it doesn't reoccur, you know, so that's something I have to deal with, you know, in long term that not looking forward to, but mm-hmm. It's just something I got to do. So
do you know anything about the person that donated the kidney?
I don't. I was just one of the lucky ones. I talked with the transplant coordinator, and you know, I basically said, you know, I feel like I won the lottery. I'm not talking like the scratch off ticket. I'm talking like the Mega Million kind of thing, you know. And it was a great day. So yeah,
you're a brand new man.
Yeah, well, right? it's
you're getting close.
Getting close. You know, I'd say I'm probably like 85% or something. You know, I ain't gonna run no marathons yet, but I can walk up a flight of stairs without having to take a break, you know.
Sure.
And being in dialysis, it really runs you down. I mean, you know the first 6 months or so that I was on dialysis, you can kind of regain, you know, it's every other day kind of thing. You know, when I was doing it in the center, you did it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, so you had a little rest. So Sunday, like, you're good to go. And then by Monday, you know, afternoon, you're just wiped from, you know, the treatment. So, and then, you know, as time progressed, I lost a lot of that, and you just never regained it. It was just a kind of a solid state, like, of, you know, being fatigued, you know. It just never got better. So That was the toughest part about it.
Someone that didn't know, looking at you right now, I mean, they would know that you had gone through any of this. You look good, man.
Well, thank you, Phil. It never gets old hearing that. Yeah. You know?
But you do. I mean, you feel good?
Yeah, I do. You know, prior to transplant, you know, I really had to keep up on, like, I did home dialysis, and you had to keep up on iron, and, you know, you could definitely tell when, you know, through, like, looking at somebody's eyes when, you know, it was getting low, and, you know, it was the same situation. I had to draw labs and stuff at home and send it in, and, you know, then adjust any of my treatments right at home, you know, so... Yeah, I just had to get some boosters here a week or so ago. They're like, oh, you know, you feel comfortable giving yourself a shot? I'm like, bring it on. I got this, you know. So I know how to do that now, you know. But, yeah.
You're used to everything. You told me in the lobby that, you know, you're never sure that you're going to get this till you wake up and it's in your body. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the nurses, you know, they kind of instilled in me, like, you know, you could show up and when they harvest, you know, either living or non, you know, when they open you up and they take it out, it could be damaged from a traumatic injury, or, you know, there could be different polyps or something on there, you know, until they take that out, there's no guarantee, you know. And when they pulled mine out, he came in right into the room and he's like, yep, we just got it out and everything looks good. And he's like, we're just prepping the room and we'll be rolling in about half an hour. I'm like, I guess let's do this.
So how long after you got the kidney, the new kidney, were you up walking around? Did they get you up fairly soon?
The next day.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they get you up, and I couldn't tell you the difference from in a 24-hour difference, because I had the surgery on like a Friday afternoon, and by Saturday afternoon, I was, you know, ready to leave. I mean, I felt fantastic. It, you know, cleaned your blood out that quick, you know. By Monday, they sent me home, so.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, so.
That seems so soon after such a major thing.
It was, yeah. You know, it's a fairly large decision, too, you know. They were telling me, oh, 7, 8 inches, and it turned out to be like 15, I think. You know?
Yeah. Ruined your modeling career, then.
Yeah, I know. Like, my belly model career is ruined.
Yeah. Oh, well, you got that going for you.
Yeah.
But we want to transition a little bit and talk about the importance of organ donors. Melissa Meyer is here, marketing strategist for EW Organ and Tissue Donation. And Melissa, you've been listening to the conversation, and there are a lot of success stories like Craig's. Aren't there?
Yes, a lot of success stories. And that's great when somebody can receive an organ and walk out of the hospital a couple days later and get back to their most of their regular activities. The unfortunate truth, not to be a downer, is that about 17 people every day die waiting for an organ. Mm-hmm. That's just the fact. There's a huge gap between available organs and the recipients or the people that are waiting on a recipient list for organs. So my job is to encourage everyone to become an organ donor, to register as an organ donor, either through your state, through the national registry. In Wisconsin, we've got several ways that you can register. You can register at heroicdeed.com, like heroicdeed.com, or when you're getting your hunting, fishing, and trapping license, there's a checkbox there that you can register. This year, for the first time, on your state tax forms, and I know nobody likes to pay taxes, but when you sit down to do it, there is a checkbox on your Wisconsin state tax form where you can register as a donor. And then, of course, at the DMV, when you renew or get your driver's license, you can check a box and register as a donor. So that's, you know, our job is to save as many lives as we can and have as many people registered as organ donors as we can. And then my second call to action after that is talk to your family about your decision and talk to your family about your wishes, because God forbid, you know, if you're in a situation where you may be able to be a donor, which is actually very rare, it's very helpful if your family already understands what your wishes would be and what your decisions would be. No one likes to think about end of life, and end of life planning is difficult, but the reality is that we're all going to get there. So we strongly encourage people to have a plan and then talk to your family about what your wishes and what your decision is. Because it makes it easier on the family. It's one less thing for them to think about on that day.
Years ago, it used to be on your driver's license.
Yep, there's an orange donor dot.
It still is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember it now. It's been a while.
Yep, there's an orange dot that they put on your driver's license, and now everything is online. In fact, this is the 15-year anniversary of everything being online in the state of Wisconsin. So we can, once we know the party's first name, last name, you know, information, our team goes to work seeing if they're on any registries. That's one of the first things that we check when we get a referral from, for example, an ER. And I know this is hard to talk about, but it's the reality is that we can save lives.
Right.
Also, what we urge people to think about is not ruling yourself out. People think, oh, I'm too old, or I drank too much, I smoke too much, I'm hard on my body, nobody would want my organs. And that's really not the case. You'd be surprised. There was a case last year where there was a 97-year-old donor who gave an organ to a 65-year-old recipient. Wow. Okay, so the science is leaping and bounding forward. The research is leaping forward. So we just ask people to don't rule yourself out. Like, leave that decision up to the medical professionals, right? Because you might be able to donate corneas and somebody who was blind can see now, right? There's all kinds of things. There's burn victims, skin. If you've ever had an ACL repair, that was probably donated tissue. So there's all sorts of ways that you can save lives and also improve people's lives through organ and tissue donation. I won't get off my soapbox now. That was a speech.
But you'd like to see those rates get higher, you know, in some parts of the state they're higher than others, correct?
Right. And in fact, Richland County has one of the lowest percentages of registrants in the state of Wisconsin. I think it's right around 54%. I didn't look at it today, but, and that's low. Some of the highest areas have registration rates, and it's a percentage of adult population of as high as 74, 75, 76% of people make that legal decision and go on a registry and say, yes, I want to people, I want to save a life. If I'm in a position where I could save a life through organ donation, I want to save a life. I'm giving my authorization now so that it's one less thing for my family to think about if they're having that tough day.
Well, what about a scenario of, let's say, a young adult dies, unfortunately, in some sort of traffic crash, but they have not signed up to be a donor? Can the family donate the organs, or is...
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's... So if you've... Get technical here. The it's called first person authorization. If you've registered somewhere as an organ, tissue, and eye donor, you've it's first person authorization. Those are your wishes. Your family, if you're in a position where you can't speak for yourself, which is the case, then your family can give that authorization. Yes, absolutely. And that's something that is usually discussed. Julie, jump in if you want to, because you actually, I don't have any medical background whatsoever, so I should have said that right at the top. But no, your family absolutely can make that decision, and it comes along with a sort of a group of other end-of-life decisions, right? If they're talking to medical professionals and you have received a grave prognosis, which is terrible, it means you're not getting better, you're not walking out, then the family can be approached and we can have that conversation. And the family is more than welcome to bring it up as well, to say, we want our son or daughter to live on. Like, it can be a real comfort to the family to know that that heart is still beating somewhere, to know those lungs are breathing somewhere, to know, okay, I lost my child or I lost my loved one, but another family is now maybe going to get another 10, 15, 20 years with their loved one. So it can be something of a silver lining, and it can be a comfort to a grieving family to know that they were able to do some good out of a bad situation.
And I'll also say, you know, professionals that are in hospitals or ICUs or wherever patients may be, they're going to be tender. They're going to be respectful. They're going to have conversations that are difficult, but they're not going to be pushy. They're not going to be, they'll be persuasive in a way that respects the wishes of the people in the room. You know, they're not there to be salespeople, but they are going to talk to you about potential. You're bringing hope to someone who might not have it. You know, in the end, like you said, that person is living on and bringing more life and hope and potentially saving other people's lives. You know, we don't know what the potential for that human has. Craig is very valuable in his job and in his life, and he's bringing things to people. So the life that person brought to him is passed forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You read those stories all the time. In fact, I just wrote in the last week about a family hearing the heart of their loved one in this other young person. And that's got to be amazing.
It's very moving. And we do a lot of things to honor that deceased donor, right? Because it is the ultimate gift, and it's a truly altruistic gift. And they are heroes. And we'll do a flag raising. I'm sure people may have seen honor walks on social media. We have highly trained social workers and a chaplain. They follow the families. It's very, very tender and respectful, because this is the ultimate gift. And this family's probably having the worst day they've ever had, and they're grieving. So we never, ever want to do anything that disrespects or dishonors that donor or that situation. And our teams will stay with those families for months or sometimes even years. We've got someone in Wisconsin who does a golf outing every year to honor her loved one. And it's been 10 years, and it's her way of giving back, because it was a really rough day, but she was able to find some good.
Are there some misinformation out there about organ donation or those kind of things?
The couple that I hear, I do a lot of events and talk to the public one-on-one, not so much on the radio, but the one that I hear most is, if they know I'm a donor, they won't save me.
Oh.
Which is absolutely 100% not even close to true. In fact, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. And medical professionals are morally, ethically, and legally bound to take every possible measure to save a life. We are never called. We never approach a family unless it has gone past that point of grave prognosis. So the idea that someone is out there aggressively getting organs, that's just not true. That's just, it couldn't be farther from the truth. What's the other one? And then the other one is, nobody would want my organs. I'm too sick. I'm too old. And again, the science is leaping forward in incredible rates. Even someone who's HIV positive, there are people who are HIV positive on the waiting list. So we might match you with one of those. Hepatitis can be cured. There's all sorts of things that we can do to
improve the health of an organ.
Thank you. Thank you.
After procurement is a word that's used in healthcare.
Yeah, we say recovery. Yeah. We have the recovery team. And again, we do moments of silence in the OR. We play whatever music the family wants in the OR. It's very, very much honoring and respecting that ultimate gift of that donor.
Well, and Melissa talked about the health of the donor. So, you know, if end of life is a conversation that families are having with the healthcare team, the healthier that organ or those organs are, the better survival it is. So, you know, like Melissa was saying, you want to do everything you can to make sure those organs have the best chance of survival so that the recipient has the best chance of survival. So there is almost no stops they won't pull. They want to make sure that they're doing the best by those, by the patient and by the recipient.
Indeed. And then, so as we mentioned with Craig, things move quite quickly. How long can the organ stay viable then before it goes into another body?
I am not a medical professional, and it varies by organ. I could quick Google, or Julie, you might know.
I don't know the specifics, but it's true. It has to do with the particular donor, the particular organ.
I think that kidney is the longest. It can be up to 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Like, yeah.
The longer it is out, the less viable it becomes.
Right. Yeah.
It's, you know, if it's out for 4 or 5 hours, you know, what I was told, mm-hmm. you know, that's way better than 20. You know, not that it can't be, but to get it going again, it takes a lot more medication.
And I can remember stories when I worked at Mayo in Rochester. I can remember stories of patients saying, yeah, they held our flight in Minneapolis to come to Rochester. And it turned out it was, you know, someone walking on with a cooler I don't mean to.
That happened to me on a flight recently.
Really?
Because time is of the essence. If that person carrying the organ doesn't make it on that flight, they might have to wait another hour or longer. Time is tissue, just like with brains and strokes and blood clots. Time is tissue, so you want.
So I just Googled.
Pumping.
Sorry.
Oh yeah. Good.
So heart and lungs 4 to 6 hours, liver 8 to 12 hours, pancreas 12 to 18 hours, intestine, and we do small intestine once in a while, 8 to 16 hours, and kidneys 24 to 36 hours. But I know, I mean, just from the ambient knowledge I've picked up working at an OPO, 24 hours is really. If it gets past that, right, because you need to find a transplant center that will receive it.
Because that takes time, too. Like, yeah. You know, Craig had to drive from Richland Center to Madison. So you can't be, you have to factor in those things when you have a donor. You don't want the recipient several hours away. So, again, tales of patients saying, yeah, we had to stay in Rochester for 3 months or, you know, we've been here since September. So, you know, to make sure everything happens and is successful as best it can be, the timeline needs to be short.
And it's really impressive the details that come together, because there's our nurses, the coordinators, there's the social workers that approach mm-hmm. a family, there's the surgical recovery team. Frequently, if it's, let's say the transplant is going to happen at Northwestern or somewhere nearby, that those surgeons might come personally for the recovery and personally bring the organ back. Multiple ORs have to be set up. And then all of the things that honor the decedent, like our honor walks and our flag raisings and our moment of silence, and what music are we going to play, and is this going to travel on ground or in a plane? Are we med-flighting or are we air? Like, so many things need to come together. It really, really is a miracle when it all lines up, mm-hmm. and someone gets their loved one
right
to come home. And I mean, it's amazing. And that's, again, circle back to my drum that I beat, register to be an organ, tissue, and eye donor, because it's very unusual for someone to pass in a way that organ donation is even possible. And the more people that are registered, the more lives we can save. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Craig, I think we're fortunate to live where we do, because we have such a fine health system in Madison. An hour away, yes. You're able to get down there in a heartbeat, weren't you?
And I would say the biggest advantage they have is like right in the front door is their transplant clinic. I mean, it like takes priority. You walk right in there, they get you right in, you know. So this is, you know, post-transplant, you know. From day one at UW was fantastic, you know. The doctors, the nurses, I can't say that anyone wronged me in any way. It was informative. I can't complain.
I wonder what's going through your head as you're driving to Madison that night. You know, I mean, you know, you're just thinking, you're hopeful, obviously.
Absolutely. It was very stressful. You know, nerve-wracking was the best way I could put it. You know, you show up and they send you home. That's the worst case scenario, you know. But not only that, you know, there's stories of, you know, receiving a transplant and it just doesn't take, you know. That's a big if, you know. You know, there's different scenarios where, like, if it doesn't wake up right away is what they say, and you end up having to stay there for a week or 2 weeks, you know, they'll put you up in a hospital or a hotel, and you got to come in for treatments. And I don't know what drugs they give you to kind of boost it back up, but, you know, that really plays in your mind. And, mm-hmm. you know, as the days progress when you're in the hospital there, everything looks good, and the next day's even better, and they come in and tell you, you're textbook, you know, and, you know, we're probably sending you home tomorrow.
Woohoo, there you go.
Then you can finally breathe a little bit, uh-huh. you know, but, yeah, and everything's been good for the last 4 months, so.
And you're back to work?
Yeah, back full time. I took about 6 weeks off. They say you could go up to, like, 3 months taking time off, and it was definitely 6 weeks, because couldn't stand up straight for about 4 weeks, you know. Uh-huh. You know, like, there was a couple days, like, I think I'm ready to walk, you know. Like, I'm going to go check the mail. You get about 30 steps out of the house, and it's like, I'm going to go back to the couch. The mail can wait, you know. So it was 4 weeks, and you were pretty sore. It took me a while to stand straight up, you know. I don't know if it helped, you know, bending over and walking, but...
Felt better.
In my mind, it was.
Yeah. So. Well, of course, this is coming up on Sunday, the pancake breakfast, and I'm sure you're hoping to see a lot of friends out there that day.
Oh, I've already got a lot of responses from people, like, you know, they can't wait to come help support a cause for me, and I can't thank Julie and the community enough for putting it on for me.
Absolutely. We're very fortunate to live where we live, Jim.
Yes, we are. You know, it's a great community event. I think that's something, too, I was talking with Craig's mom about. We live in a community where everybody, yes, we're literally related, but it's still a community. We're yeah. one big family. It doesn't take a village. It takes several townships and villages. And, you know, people might not have deep pockets, but they're willing to eat breakfast. It's a time where you can get together and you appreciate each other's company. You catch up with people you haven't seen in a while, but, you know, you spend a few dollars, and hopefully if the shoe is on the other foot, we know people will pitch in too.
Well, it's a celebration, I think.
Absolutely, it is. Yes.
Yeah. Celebrate yes. Craig and yes. all he's been through. And
a lot of the successes our community has hit. You know, Craig has won. Craig is one organ donor or one organ recipient in our community. We've had friends and family who've received bone marrow. There are different blood recipients. My own children, they were preemies. They received blood products. So, you know, even if you aren't an organ donor, you can donate blood. You can register to be a marrow donor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those things take just your time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little inconvenience, but you're not, but you can also be a living donor. Craig was a recipient of a living donor, and that's a really selfless act too.
I guess so. Yeah.
Being able to think about someone else and knowing maybe someday I might need to, but right now I'm okay if I can give one of mine to somebody else.
Right. Yeah, that's a point that we haven't talked about a lot, Melissa, but living donors, certainly what a selfless act that is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I was at a banquet last weekend with a gentleman who's lived 63 years on one kidney and is just fine. He had a situation when he was a child, down to one kidney, and you would never know. I mean, he's walking around, he's dancing, he's eating dinner. And he was shouting that from the rooftops because it was a Kidney Foundation awareness-raising event. And you can also do, obviously, the highest percentage or highest match would be like a twin, donating to a twin, an identical twin, but and family members and all of that. But you can also do, and you can get more information from the National Kidney Foundation. If you just go to National Kidney Foundation, you can do there's a voucher program. So let's say I want to give you one of my kidneys, but we're not a match. I can altruistically donate a kidney to whoever is the best match, and you get a voucher that, for lack of a better expression, moves you up in the list. That's definitely something that can be done as well. So, and blood, marrow, there's also, you can be a living liver donor. You can give part of your liver to someone and your liver actually regenerates. The technology is amazing of what people can do. And again, back to the, if you knew that you could save a life, would you?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that blood donation too, because I had to have several transfusions.
Oh, tons of blood.
I mean, yeah. My kidney, you know, your kidneys help produce blood, you know, so I probably had 3 or 4 transfusions over a year. You know, I just couldn't keep my hemoglobin up. And I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's almost as good as an organ because you can't live without blood.
Right.
So, you know.
And that's something, there's myths out there because there was a stretch where certain populations weren't allowed to donate blood. And a lot of
those restrictions have really been lifted a lot because we've discovered a lot of those restrictions that were in place were false. Mm-hmm. That a lot of different filters, I'll say, might have kept you from having healthy blood, and that's just not true any longer. They've done a lot of research that has proven that some of those things were misinformation that we just didn't have the science for.
Overly cautious.
Yep. Overly cautious is a really good phrase.
But just about anyone can donate blood, and your body makes more the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have lots of drives in our area. So
yes,
lots,
we do.
Lots of chances.
If you can't find one, you're not looking.
Right, exactly. Well, it's been a very informative show. We're going to talk to Dr. Fahad Aziz coming up here in a little bit, kind of getting kind of on the medical side of it. Very interesting conversation coming up here. Anything else anybody would like to add?
Come and eat pancakes.
And the hours are?
We're going to start serving at 7 a.m. and we'll wrap it up about 12:30. Lots of bake sale and silent auction items.
Wonderful. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Good to see you again, Craig.
Thank you, Phil.
You bet. Craig Perkins joining us along with Julie Thompson and Melissa Meyer, marketing strategist for Yieldy Organ and Tissue Donation on The Morning Show.
Since 1988, Kinship of Richland County has been matching caring adults with area children ages 5 through 17 who need a little more TLC than they normally receive. After careful screening, volunteers agree to spend at least 1 hour per week for a year with kids who have similar interests. They do things like fishing, baking, and bowling, but the main benefit is the time they spend together. Mentors listen and offer encouragement to help the child discover their own path to a fulfilling future. All that's required is a commitment of time and sincerity. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a volunteer or referring a child, please contact us at 608-475-2886 or email us at kinshiprc@gmail.com. Monetary donations are also welcome and can be mailed to Kinship, P.O. Box 51, Richland Center, Wisconsin. All gifts are tax deductible and greatly appreciated.
Thousands of Wisconsinites died. Wisconsin people should always take priority over profits. Tell Judge Brad Schimmel to look out for Wisconsinites, not out-of-state drug companies. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
Hi, this is Teresa Clary with Clary Memorial Funeral Home. With today's rising inflation, now is the perfect time to pre-plan and pre-fund your funeral with coverage from Pekin Insurance through Clary Memorial Funeral Home. Your pre-funded policy, called Pathway, is guaranteed and can be used anywhere in the United States. Call today and protect against future inflation with a Pathway policy from Pekin Insurance. Contact Josh Clary at Clary Memorial Funeral Home for more information.
News time today is sponsored by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies, caring for you and about you, and by BL Signs of Richland Center. Partly sunny, breezy, and much warmer today, a high of 55, with southeast to south winds at 10 to 20 and gusty. A few clouds tonight and a low of 34, 62 for Tuesday. Right now at WRCO, we're at 21 degrees, up from the overnight low of 18.
The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy has exceptional caring staff and great services. They are a locally owned, independent pharmacy, proudly serving the surrounding area communities. The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy is committed to helping patients manage their medications. The pharmacists work along with patients and their healthcare providers to find an individualized plan to help each patient maximize the benefits of their medications while minimizing or preventing adverse effects, interactions, costs, and waste.
I'm Phil Nee with news. On Saturday afternoon at approximately 1:31, the Avoca Police Department received a report that Ray Pulvermacher, 71 of Muscadet, was missing. Pulvermacher, who suffers from dementia, had traveled to the village of Avoca with other members of his group for the annual St. Patrick's Day parade, but walked away from the group. Workers from the group home that searched for about an hour unsuccessfully could not find him. Avoca police, along with deputies from the Iowa County Sheriff's Department and Highland Police, initiated a search for the man. At 2 o'clock that afternoon, help was requested from the Avoca Fire Department, Avoca EMS, and Iowa County K-9 Phoenix. A command post was made at the Avoca Fire Station, and a unified command structure was established. Responders checked the area, including a residence where the subject may have spent time in the past, but were unable to locate him. Additional resources were requested from Iowa County Emergency Management, Highland Fire Department, Highland EMS, the Iowa County Drone Team, Iowa County Tech Rescue Team, and the Wisconsin DNR. A silver alert was activated through the Wisconsin Department of Justice a short time later. Iowa County K-9 Phoenix discovered a track for the subject through a part of the village. Responders were broken into search groups, and a grid search of the village was conducted on foot. Drones deployed and worked with the groups but did not locate the subject. At approximately 3:40, a call for assistance was placed to the Wisconsin Drone Network and to a canine search organization known as SOS. Officials believe that Pulvermacher may have entered a wooded hillside south of the village. The search was expanded to include that area and the rural area surrounding the village and around Avoca Lake. At 5:38 p.m., a citizen notified Avoca police that a subject matching the description of Ray Pulvermacher was located
located just southeast of the village, exiting a wooded area. The citizen offered Pulvermacher a ride and transported him to the Avoca Fire Department. He claimed no injuries and was reunited with his caretakers. 10 emergency agencies and over 50 responders assisted in the incident, which lasted about 5.5 hours, according to Avoca Police Chief Chad Knable. Did you notice some dust on the cars over the weekend? Well, there was a reason for that.
The National Weather Service says the storm system that brought rain and high winds to the state on Friday also brought a batch of dust kicked up from high winds in Texas. The effect is much like the hazy air we've been seeing the past few years from Canadian wildfires. The dust did raise air quality alerts, but was gone by Sunday. In addition, high winds caused storm damage to several structures and homes in southern Wisconsin Friday night into Saturday morning. Raymond Newport, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Expectations are that Milwaukee Public School students will see school resource officers when they return to class today. Mayor Cavalier Johnson spoke to Fox 6 Milwaukee over the weekend that it was not his request, but it's state law. SROS were required to be in the MPS schools last year, but under the deal, the Republican-controlled Wisconsin legislature reached the city. A Milwaukee County judge recently set a deadline for the city to have 25 officers in place or $1,000 daily fines. Officers completed a 40-hour training program last week. Sean Duffy wants a review green transportation infrastructure. The U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary and former Republican congressman from Wisconsin has already frozen funding for a program that pays for installation of new electric vehicle charging stations around the state, and more may be on the way. The same memo that paused the EV charging grant program also includes a stop action on all Biden-area discretionary grants to build bike lanes and other green infrastructure so the agency can review projects for possible removal. The memo cited executive orders issued by the Trump administration that take aim at the Biden administration's diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility goals and efforts to reduce the carbon footprint of the nation's transportation system. Wisconsin food pantries and farmers want the USDA to restore programs to help buy local produce. The agency announced last week it was ending the local food purchase assistance and the local food for schools programs. That's part of cuts initiated by billionaire Elon Musk and President Trump. Over 280 farms and 250 food pantries in Wisconsin took part in the LFPA program in 2023 and 24 with $4.2 million. In food distributed to food pantries. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction got $3.4 million for the school food program. USDA officials say the programs were meant only as pandemic support and no longer serve the agency. Vernon County is no stranger to disasters, and emergency management wants to provide a time for you and your family to get information and resources before an emergency or disaster happens. Vernon County Emergency Management will host a Disaster Recovery Resources Seminar coming up on Wednesday at the Westby Performing Arts Center starting at 6 p.m. The purpose of this seminar is to give resources and information to citizens before a disaster occurs so they know where to start and are able to recover faster if affected by an emergency or disaster. Several organizations will be in attendance to provide a short 10 to 15 minute presentation on who their organization is and what they can offer for assistance. Handouts and brochures may be available as well. The event is free and open to everyone.
BL Signs, a full-service sign design company in Richland Center, specializes in creating all types of interior and exterior signage to meet your needs, from internally lighted aluminum sign cabinets to post and panel signs, LED channel letters, vinyl lettering, and more. BL Signs has you covered for your project, big or small. Call BL Signs today at 647-0149 to see what they can do for you. BL Signs, Richland Center.
The forecast for today calls for a high of 55, and then tonight a few clouds, a low of 34. Partly sunny, continued warm on Tuesday with a high of 62. Clouding over Tuesday night, a 30% chance of light rain late, a low of 39. Wednesday, some light rain likely, and then it turns to snow later on in the day, 1 to 3 inches of snow accumulation by late evening, a high of 48 Wednesday, and then falling temps, a high of just 41 Thursday, 49 for Friday. In Richland Center, yesterday's high was 41. We were at 22 degrees at midnight, dropped to 18. And now, with the wind around 3 from the southwest, we are back up to 22 degrees.
Our move to Main Street is getting closer and savings are getting bigger. March 17th through 22nd, take 20% off everything in our Church Street location. That's right, 20% off sofas, recliners, beds, and more. These deals won't last, and once we move, they're gone. Stop by A-Plus Furniture and Mattress Outlet on Church Street before March 22nd and save big. Main Street, here we come. All sales are final. No refunds or returns.
There's no such thing as too much caring. That's why Gunderson Health System and Bellin Health have come together to form Amplify Health. The same doctors you trust, the same hospitals and clinics you count on, the same great care, all amplified by an even higher focus on empathy. Amplify Health is more than just a new name. It's a way to make personalized care more personal than ever. Amplify Health by Gunderson. A little empathy changes everything.
Sports Time is sponsored by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, a look at some local area notes, and also the Badgers will now be on the run toward the NCAA's coming up on Thursday. Marquette is headed there as well, seated 7th. The Badgers are seated 3. And we'll have more coming up here in a moment from WRCO Sports.
LS Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. The fastest growing tractor line in Wisconsin is LS Tractor, part of the LG group of companies. These high-quality four-wheel drive diesel tractors are one of the best values in compact tractors. They have silky smooth hydrostatic transmissions. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of LS tractors to fit your needs. Learn about the full line of LS tractors at Southern Wisconsin Tractor Experts, the Homesteader Store.
Over the weekend, there was plenty of basketball on the high school scene. WIAA boys sectional finals were played, and really just one team from Southwest Wisconsin making it onto the state level. That would be Mineral Point in Division 4. And the seeding process took place over the weekend as well. The Pointers are seeded 2, and they will take on 3 Aquinas on Thursday night, followed by following the game between 1 seed Bondiwell and 4 the Prairie School as well. The WIAA tournament will tip off on Thursday afternoon with Division 3 when Freedom plays Elk Mound and Milwaukee Academy of Science will face Lake Mills as well. And then the division action continues with the Thursday night games for Division 4. Division 5 on Friday morning, Cochran Fountain City and Turtle Lake and Sheboygan Lutheran and Abundant Life Christian will face off, followed by Division 2 on Friday afternoon, Racine Park against Cedarburg and Wauwatosa West against Wausau East. The Division I semis on Friday night will pit Wisconsin Lutheran against Oshkosh North and Wanakee versus Marshfield. Champions were crowned over the weekend at the WIAA State Girls Tournament. The Division I titleist was Kimberly, also Division II won by Wauwatosa East, 59-58 over Edgewood in that title game. Oosberg won the Division III title. Cuba City won Division IV with a 53-50 hard-fought win against St. Mary Catholic. And Division V was won by Assumption over Barneveld in a close defensive battle, 34-30 on Saturday afternoon. Former Richland Center High School athlete Wes Keller is now in his senior season with the Eau Claire track team. Over the weekend, he wrapped up the indoor season as an All-American. Wes jumped 6.975 in the high jump competition to earn fifth place at the Gasolano Training Center at Nazareth University in Rochester, New York, and as a result became a Division III All-American again. Congratulations to W. Eau Claire track and field athlete Wes Keller. His parents are Ryan and Michelle Keller of Richland Center. The Badgers have earned a number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament despite losing the Big Ten title game to Michigan. The Wolverines closed Sunday's championship game on an 11-2 run to win 59-53. Wisconsin had set a conference tournament single game record with 19 three-pointers last week, but shooters were good on only 7 of 39 Sunday. John Blackwell's 18 topped the scoring column. The Badgers will take on Montana Thursday in Denver. That's early Thursday afternoon. Here's Coach Greg Gard.
No, I think our strength coach will take care of some of that. Tomorrow we'll fly back here tonight and then use tomorrow as a recovery day and then use Tuesday, Wednesday as prep days for Montana and then be ready to go. I think it sounds like we're leaving sometime Tuesday and then we'll have our open practice up on Wednesday and then be ready to go for Thursday.
Coach Greg Gard as the team makes plans. Marquette has been seeded 7th in the NCAA tournament after a 79-63 loss to St. John's Friday. The Golden Eagles will meet New Mexico Friday night in Cleveland. Another triple-double by Giannis Antetokounmpo was not enough to keep Sunday's game close for the Bucks. The Oklahoma City Thunder rolled to a 121-105 decision. Giannis filled the stat sheet with 21 points, 10 assists, and a dozen rebounds, but they couldn't get it done as a team. The team now flies to the West Coast for games at Golden and then they'll move on to others. 5-game Western road trip coming up, which Damian Lillard says will be a big one for the Bucks.
It's coming at the perfect time. You know, like you said, it's a big trip. You know, we got to handle our business. But I think it's a...
Dr. Fahad Aziz joins us on WRCO Radio and from the UW Health Transplant Center. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know this is a cause that is near and dear to you, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Phil, for having me.
What can you tell me about what you do, like a typical day for you?
So, Phil, I'm a kidney transplant doctor. So most of my day goes by taking care of the people who have a kidney transplant. And also taking care of the patients, you know, who have a chronic kidney disease and who are undergoing a transplant evaluation. So most of my day revolves around either on this side of transplant or the other side of transplant.
Is kidney disease more common than it used to be?
Kidney disease is, you know, as the medical science is advancing, people are getting more old, and that's why there's more kidney disease now as compared to what we have a long time ago. If I talk about the number right today, there are 37 million people in this country who have a chronic kidney disease. And there are close to 800,000 people today who have a failed kidney today.
So a lot of times, do people have typical symptoms, or can you be going along without symptoms?
And that's the most unfortunate part of the kidney disease, that 90% of the people who have a chronic kidney disease don't even know that they have a kidney disease. And unfortunately, when this disease shows up, people already have advanced symptoms of, you know, kidney failure. And that's the problem because, you know, if you don't know we have a disease, we don't take the essential steps to slow it down.
At what level can we turn it around just with lifestyle changes?
I think if I tell you the number one cause of kidney disease is diabetes in this country, and number two cause is high blood pressure. And both these diseases have a lot to do with the way we live. If we have a better control of diabetes and if we have a good control of, you know, blood pressure by our diet, by exercise, we can definitely, prevent chronic kidney disease. And if somebody have it, we can slow the progression of this disease.
It's astounding to me how many people are on the kidney transplant wait list. That number seems to go up.
Absolutely. If I talk only today, you know, there are more than 100,000 people who are waiting for a kidney transplant. And let me tell you some more numbers, you know, and we in this country, you know, transplant somewhere between 20,000 to 24,000 patients every year. So you can see a huge, gap between the people who are in the need of a kidney and, you know, the number of people who get a kidney.
To be a kidney donor, we need to go through the process. But I think it's one of the things that you're on the radio to talk about today is you'd like to see more people sign up to be donors, wouldn't you?
That's absolutely right. So if we look at over kidney transplant in this country, you know, only one third of the people get a kidney from living donation, which means somebody, you know, either it's a relative or a friend, you know, step forward and is willing to give a kidney to their loved ones. So if we can increase that number, you know, we can improve the gap we have, people who are waiting for this, you know, life-saving organ and the people who are actually getting it. So to bridge that gap, we definitely need more living donors.
To be a recipient, do you have to have the same blood type as the donor?
So now, you know, with advancement in medical science, you know, they don't have to be the same donor. What we say that, you know, people can undergo a paired kidney exchange program. So it means if my blood group does not match with one of my loved ones who need a kidney, then I can give it, I can enter into this exchange program, you know, where I can give my kidney to someone else and, you know, in the list, you know, they will find a person with the same blood type and give it to my loved one. In the end of the day, you know, everyone would have a living kidney and everyone will get the kidney sooner. So it's possible. It's not a direct donation, but it's possible.
So obviously we can live without a kidney then if we're healthy. Is that correct?
So we are made with two kidneys. And if we are in a good health, one kidney is good enough to take us for the rest of our life. So when someone, you know, give a kidney to and we approve them, you know, from a health standpoint of view, the chances of that person losing their kidney is less than 1%, which is a very small risk.
Can we have one kidney diseased and the other one not?
Now, usually the kidney disease happens in both kidneys. So that's the reason when we are trying to do a kidney biopsy to diagnose a kidney disease, we can biopsy either of the kidneys, and that can tell us about the disease.
Why would a kidney be turned down for a recipient? Are there a lot of reasons?
There can be a lot of reasons, you know, if we talk specifically to living donation, you know, if somebody is, you know, have own health issues and or we deem that, you know, giving the kidney may not be beneficial to that person, then we turn those donors down. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to make sure if we take a kidney from someone, you know, it's a safe choice for them. If somebody give a kidney and end up on dialysis, then we did not achieve the goal we want to achieve.
Does someone have to be vaccinated against, for instance, COVID? Is that one of the things that you look at as well?
That requirement is no more needed in most of the centers. But overall, you know, we do like, you know, our donors to be healthy, you know, vaccinated, you know, so that they don't get into any disease. But it's not a requirement, though.
Talk a little bit about dialysis, because I know that we have a dialysis center here in Richland Center as well that is great for area patients. But that's for an advanced kidney failure. Is that correct?
That's right. So whenever the kidney function is less than 15%, that's the point where most of the people, you know, it's kidney is we need kidney to live. It's a life sustaining organ. So if somebody's kidney failed, now to sustain them with the life, you know, we need dialysis, which basically, you know, we put the patients with this machine, which act as a kidney, which act as a filter, you know, and takes the toxins out of our body, you know, take excessive fluid out of our body and stabilize our electrolytes. So that's what the dialysis do. Means right now, you know, there are more than 500,000 patients in this country who are undergoing, you know, some sort of, you know, dialysis, either hemodialysis in the centers are doing in a home in forms of peritoneal dialysis.
Is it an exciting time to be in medicine? Because it sounds like you're making all kinds of breakthroughs.
Absolutely. I think our center is doing really well. We usually transplant on average, you know, close to 300 kidney transplant alone. We have one third of our transplants are living donor kidneys, you know. So we are trying to expand that number so that, you know, we can serve the needs of this area.
I think that we're very fortunate to live where we live, a close proximity to Madison, because I think you have a great system there at the UW Health, don't you?
Thank you very much for saying that, Phil. That's right. It's very easy to register through our process, you know, to get a kidney. We maintain a list of people who are in need of a kidney. Then, you know, we also have people, you know, who want to undergo a living donation. We have people from different blood types, you know, who are waiting for a kidney. We get those organs, you know, almost, you know, if we talk about 300 transplants per year, it means we are almost, you know, doing a transplant almost close to average of one per day. We also do, you know, several high-risk transplants when the recipients are very sick, you know, or they have other medical conditions. So we are expert in those transplants as well. We're also very fairly good in people who need two organs. For example, if somebody has kidney fail from diabetes, you know, we can do a simultaneous kidney and pancreas transplant to take care of both together. Similarly, we have a very efficient program doing heart and kidney transplant or lung or kidney transplant or liver or kidney transplant. So we are one of those centers, too, who do, you know, multi-organ transplant to patients, you know, who are very sick.
The organ transplants from donors, is there an age limit that you would take a perfectly good kidney from or not?
There is no hard and fast rules here, but mostly we try to get a kidney from someone, you know, who's adult from 18 years to somewhere, you know, close to 60 years. But if somebody is in really good shape, you know, even after 60, we can definitely get a kidney from them as well.
And a lot of times, you know, you think about being a donor, and maybe if someone is maybe on the fence about it, I think you try to imagine if you had a loved one that needed that kind of service, you'd do anything in the world to try and make them better. And I think that's a good way to look at it, isn't it?
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, the two biggest advantages of, you know, having a kidney transplant are, number one, you know, the kidney transplant prolongs life. And number two, it gives a better quality of life. People don't have to go to, you know, dialysis units, you know, and spend 3 days in a week there. So if you look that way, you know, you can help someone, you know, by giving a kidney, especially your loved ones or your friend. I think it's a big thing.
This must be rewarding work for you, Dr. Aziz.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was trained for it. I do it every day, and I have seen, you know, people living the life they want to live, and that's the most satisfactory part of my job.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on here. We'll let you get back to your busy schedule. Anything else you'd like to add for our listeners today?
The only thing I would say is that, you know, people should be more aware of chronic kidney disease, you know, take every right step to, you know, either prevent it or slow it down. And if, unfortunately, somebody has a failed kidney, you know, they should definitely go for a transplant so that they can go back to the life they want to live.
Wonderful words to end on. Thank you so much for joining us, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Phil, for having me.
Dr. Fahad Aziz joining us from UW Health in Madison.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Mark, let's talk about cemeteries in the spring. It's a pretty timely topic right now.
Oh, it is, because spring, the weather's been really nice the last couple weeks here, and so a lot more people are getting out. You can see them outside taking walks, but it's also a really good time to go back to the cemetery, especially if someone's died in the last year or so, to look at that cemetery space, to just kind of go revisit them, that individual. Pay respects, remember them, but also remember in the spring, the cemeteries do look a little bit tough because it's been a while since people have been out there. Maybe some of the flowers don't look as good. The silks may have blown around because it has been windy on multiple different days. Just know, if you're out there in the cemetery and you want to help clean up, no cemetery is going to tell you not to do it. You know, a lot of these cemeteries are just run by family members of someone in that cemetery, and they can use any help that people are willing to give them. Also, if you go out to cemeteries, know that in the spring, because of the way the cemeteries look, anyone that's been buried in the last year, the cemeteries know the graves will sink in. It's just what happens over that first winter. They will come back to fix them. They will reseed where that the grave was opened, where it's probably just mud right now. They will come back. They will fix it. You as an individual can also help them if you want to do that on your own. That's okay. They will fix it. Other thing we get a call on a lot this time of year is engraving of death dates on the stones. Yes, it has warmed up, but the engravers really haven't started yet for the year. They will start here pretty soon. They might give it a little bit more time just to kind of have a more consistent, warmer temperatures, be sure those stones are good and they're not frozen when they go out there, because they don't want to chip those stones either. So even if you go out and visit your family members that may have passed away since October or so when the engravers quit for the year, yes, they are still coming. We always tell all of our families that at a cemetery, when we order the engraving, it will be done by Memorial Day. So anyone who's had a death, the order has been put in, it will be done by Memorial Day. And there's not a lot of guys that have this job that go out to cemeteries and engrave right on site. They don't take the stones away. They come out with their equipment. They engrave them right on site. So it does take them a while with a six-month backlog of dates to get on stones. They will get to them. But if the stone is not engraved by Memorial Day, I encourage you to call the funeral home back that had the funeral and just ask them about it, because potentially they forgot to order it. Potentially the engraver lost the order. Sometimes they'll go out there and there's something special about the actual lettering of that stone. Maybe they didn't have the right stencil because of the particular font that was picked. It's maybe not something that's very common. Maybe it's something that does have to go back to the shop depending on what it is. Most are cut into the stone. Some actually are rounded outside of the stone. Those take a lot more effort. So that may be one of those things. If you have a special stone, that just know they may be coming back, but because it's a specialty, it might take a little bit more time.
This very day, you'll see green alligators and long-necked geese, some Humpty back cows and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never gonna see no unicorn.
There you go, me cousins, the Irish Rovers, and the unicorn song. Congrats to our winner today, Mackenzie Parkhurst. Way to go. And Mackenzie will be receiving a great prize, one of these Irish boxes from Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Cafe. We appreciate you listening. Thanks to Christie's, and we'll be giving you some opportunities throughout the day and a few more little ditties as well to go along with St. Patrick's Day right here on WRCO FM 100.9 Richland Center, WRCE FM 107.9.